Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the November mailbag edition of the Arsenal Women Askcast. I am your host, Tim Stillman. We are back after a completely unintended hiatus of 6 weeks, for which we really, really apologise for this kind of big gap. We usually try to do a podcast every fortnight. However, a mixture of having a guest lined up for mid-October who had to reschedule, and we're hopeful of being able to do that. Maybe they'll have to wait till after the Men's World Cup. And then the schedule in October has just been absolutely brutal, particularly being across the men's and women's teams, where I believe there's been about 15 games in October. And on the women's side, most of those have been away games. So as you can imagine, trying to get time in to schedule one of these podcasts has been really, really tricky. And another one of the reasons it's been really, really tricky is because our co-hosts are also very successful, very in-demand people, and one of them has been able to make it this evening, Alex Ibaceta. Alex, how's you? You've been jet-setting a lot with DAZN, and I believe you were at the Clásico yesterday. How's your month been?
It's been hectic, to be honest, between football and I moved into a new place, so that was all very hectic. But yeah, I actually just got back today from Madrid. I went there for the weekend with the basis of going to a Clásico, a bit of work, a bit of holiday, a bit of everything, really. And yeah, before that, obviously, Champions League was quite busy. Got to go to, I was at Lyon Arsenal, actually. So that was my first away day of the Champions League season. And I can't really complain about that one. And then PSG Chelsea too, which wasn't as good as Lyon Arsenal, but we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, that just addresses how much has happened since we were last recorded in kind of late September, the 5-1 win over Lyon, everyone getting injured, apparently. And now we're into a November international break and we've had, Vivian Miedema being rested and et cetera, et cetera. But this is a mailbag edition, so all of that will surface in the questions, maybe except the Lyon victory, actually, which I guess is kind of a shame. I really wanted to do a podcast immediately after that, to be honest, but I had to fly home at like 7 o'clock the next morning.
Yeah.
And then, family time and all of that. And yeah, so I didn't really get a big chance to respond to that. And then, like, the next day, I was off to Liverpool for the game there. So it feels like the Lyon game just still feels a bit like a dream. You were pitch side, right? I was up in the gods, yeah, in the press box. Like, what was your impression? Because I tell you what my impression was, Alex. 2 minutes into the game, I took a photo of the pitch because I was like, because obviously I was high up and I was like, I cannot believe the space that Lyon are leaving us here. And yeah, I was sitting there going, surely they're going to close this up. And they just never did.
No, I was the only one there doing my job. And I had the tough decision of having to pick which goal I go behind, basically, it's a guessing game for anyone, isn't it?
Yeah.
I started with Lyon and about 10 minutes in, I was like, Arsenal, they're going to get a goal. Like, it's coming. So as I was walking round to the other side of the pitch, I was just about crossing the corner flag and we scored. So I stayed behind Cristiano Ronaldo the entire match to film all the Arsenal goals. And obviously I made the right decision.
Yeah.
But no, it was, you're in shock. You see, it was what, 3-0 at halftime?
Yeah, 3-1. Yeah.
Yeah. I took a picture of the scoreboard because I just couldn't believe it. All of us were in shock. It didn't make any sense. And the thing is that Arsenal played really well. There's not much to it. Lyon, yes, have injuries and stuff. And but you still have Wendy Renard, you still have Lindsay Horan, you still have these players that are going to start in any other team. So that, I don't really see that as an excuse, but Arsenal played really well. They had nothing, you know, they went in there, had nothing to lose against the champions of the Champions League, and it worked out in our favour. And it does feel like a dream, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, the Lyon midfield, obviously Lyon, by their standards, kind of struggling in the league as well. They drew 0-0 with, was it Gangon? This weekend. But like, yeah, the midfield they started against Arsenal was Lindsay Horan, Amandine Henry and Daniel van der Donk. I mean, there aren't many better midfields than that, depleted, even without like De Brits and Marijan. But yeah, obviously still a lot to do in the group and everything like that. And they'll come to the Emirates in December. But let's crack on with the listener questions. And I'm going to start in the Arseblog Discord. And the first question is Nono Sayogo, a very clever username there, based on Yaya Sanogo, the former Arsenal men's striker. In which area of the pitch do you think we lack depth? We've already had heavy rotation, forced or not, in defence and midfield, and the replacements have not only done a job, but been some of our best players, like Lotta Wubben-Moy and Frieder Marnham. So which are there still, particularly as injuries seem to be piling up a little bit, is there a specific area in the squad that you still look at, Alex, and think, oh, if we got an injury there, I think we're in trouble?
Well, I mean, you look at our centre-back situation right now. It's worked out. Having Lotta and Steph Catley has worked out a lot better than I expected it to be, if I'm being completely honest. But when you look at fullbacks, when everyone's fit, you have McCabe, Steph Catley, Noah Maritz, and Laura Vinovati on one side. Midfields, don't even get started there. Wingers, Lina Hurtig, Beth Mead, even Mana, Juan Singstina. You know, we're kind of stacked on that. But then you look at our two centre-backs. Our little two centre-backs are injured right now. And you look at the backup and it's been not great. And again, Steph is an amazing player, but that's just not her position. And she has done a lot better than expected. And we've talked about it before, how she kind of, Lotta is one of those players that needs a big player next to her, if that makes sense. Like, she feeds off the confidence of Leah Williamson, and that just goes really well together. But to have her as kind of like the main, like the principal center back, it just changes dynamic around. And I think, yeah, center back is kind of the one position. And ironically, it has happened to us already. So, yeah, it's not great. But I think center backs is where we're kind of most vulnerable.
Yeah, especially given current injuries. For me, it's still the number six position. Like, if Leah Valti isn't available, then it's Kim Little there, really. But she's injured until the new year now. So I think we're definitely vulnerable there. And just generally the number six position, I think Jesse Parker Humphreys wrote a really good piece about this last week, something I've been banging on about. But they were writing about how there are just such a lack of top class number sixes in women's football at the moment. And I think most smart clubs are going to have to repurpose players. And you look at what Chelsea are doing with Erin Cuthbert. I fancy we might have to either do that with Kim Little, which I think we've done a little bit anyway, or if we look in the academy and there's someone, I don't know, for example, Taya Gold is a centre-back who can play there. Maybe if you're Arsenal, you say, okay, we've got a bigger weakness in this position. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how, not just Arsenal, how a lot of clubs deal with that particular position. But the next question from MacN84, also from the Arseblog Discord: when do you expect we might start to hear news of contract talks for those out of contract next summer?
Tim, that's one for you, really. But I would assume not until, obviously January transfer window. I would assume it's going to be quite quiet, but I'm not too sure either. I would assume probably March is when contract stuff starts rolling out slowly.
Yeah. When you look at the players that are out of contract summer 2022, like Caitlin, Noel, Steph, they were all signed at the end of the season. To be honest, I think there was confidence in all of those. Obviously, Viv signed very late as well. I don't think there was as much confidence there. So I think a lot of those were more or less agreed, but not actually signed till the end. So, you know, I wouldn't expect much different this year. But to be honest, I don't know exactly who is out of contract. I believe Beth Mead is. And if you're Beth Mead's agent, you're probably waiting for another couple of like player of the year votes. Waiting for that. Obviously, she came second in the Ballon d'Or in the end, but any good agent would have waited to see if she was the Ballon d'Or winner before, you know, negotiating a contract. So I wouldn't expect to hear anything till the second half of the season. And to be honest, contracts still really murky. Not in an untoward way, just like getting information on them, getting accurate information on them is generally really, really difficult. I believe Jordan Nobbs is out of contract as well this summer. And I guess we'll see what happens with Jordan's contract as well. But yeah, I definitely wouldn't expect anything this side of Christmas. I think that will creep up. You'll start getting questions in the press conferences in about January, I think. But maybe I'll take the bull by the horns a little bit earlier than that. These are the questions from Twitter. And this first one, I think, touches on a subject I'm really, really interested in. I really like this question from a regular, Marieke von Litt, whose name I probably mispronounced again. We often feel bad when good players are benched, like Jordan, like Manner, but we also hate it when injuries leave us thin. Are we in the women's game too sensitive to feelings of players? Do we need to toughen up when it comes to not playing good players and putting out the best team? So I guess this is a question more around fan culture in women's football.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It's when you look at fan culture in the women's game, it is very player based. And I don't mean it in a bad way, but it is there are a lot of fans that like players over club. And then it gets to the point where the players' emotions and kind of people's sensitivity towards certain players starts coming into the debate of whether they should play, whether they should be benched. So I do think in the women's game that does happen a lot. But I think for the most part, I think we're able to kind of put that aside and genuinely say whether players should play or not. Obviously, Mano being kind of the main focus of kind of that sensible. I do agree that what Yoda said was very. I'm not really too okay with it either, but just for the situation. But in, like, if we were winning 2-1 and we could have conceded a goal, then that would have been fine. But it's just the way of doing it, which was a difference, but not the actual act. If that makes sense. Because the actual act of killing time as a sub is just very standard football, so it wouldn't have necessarily mattered, say, if we were going for a draw in the last few minutes. But I do agree that in women's football, there is a lot of fan culture around certain players, and I think for the most part, we're fine with kind of separating it, but at times we do have that certain love for certain players that might get into our head. To kind of affect our opinions. But for the most part, I think we're fine, I think, I would like to say.
Yeah. I definitely think, and apologies, you might hear some fireworks in the background in a minute around my area. Don't know what that's about. But I just, now I have a two-year-old, I hate fireworks. Sorry, I really hate them. But I think that's exactly right. There is like a player-led culture. Lots of people, when you talk to them about why they support certain teams as well, it's because a player led them to that team. Because in women's football, we don't have that kind of, oh, I support the team because like my dad and my granddad and my mum and my grandma, like on the men's side, for example, for me, like it goes back to like my great grandfather. So it's just like you support Arsenal because that's what you do. But yeah. Women's football is a little bit more rootless. Like we're creating those roots now. Like in 20 years, 50 years, people will say, I support Arsenal women because my mum, my dad, my brother, whatever. But at the moment, we're building this from the ground up. So it is a lot. So people have, I was going to use the word spurious. It's not spurious, but like people have those reasons for supporting clubs. And I definitely think that we do that more. And like you say, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it can veer into that sometimes with some people, but generally speaking, like people, it's up to people how they feel about things. And I'm not separating myself from that either. I definitely have favorites. Like,
I think everyone naturally does. I think it's more just about whether you're able to separate the players that you like versus a rational opinion, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, you feel closer to the players as well. Mm-hmm. Personally, if you go to the games, you probably get to meet them if you want to and things like that. And you know, I feel that like I have like a, I don't know, it's probably too much to say, I'm like over egging it to say a closeness to some players, but particularly like long serving players. And I've been thinking about this a lot recently with like Jordan Nobbs, because I'm really, really happy that she's getting so much love from Arsenal fans recently. And I think a lot of that, but I kind of feel a bit conflicted, because on the other hand, I do feel like there's a little bit of like sympathy there, which is not wrong. But I'm also like, I don't want to patronize Jordan. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, she's played nearly 300 games for Arsenal. She's won X amount of league titles, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't need to patronize Jordan Nobbs and say, oh, you got on today. Brilliant. Like, I'm really conscious about not doing that, even though I think she should play more. But also, like you say, trying to separate the fact that she's been at the club a long time. She's one of my favorite players, unashamedly. So it definitely comes into it, and not just for fans as well. It obviously comes into it for journalists, because you can potentially build a rapport with players that you can't
really
do.
It's also these players that you like and you follow, you know more, you naturally just know more about them as well. Yep. So when it comes from a journalism's perspective, it's just a lot easier to speak about them, to write about them, get information about them, most of it that you probably know innately at one point or another.
Yeah, you might know members of their family.
Yeah, so it comes in naturally. It's just about recognizing it, I think, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, like not in a bad way, it's just, I think, just recognition of it and kind of not feeding into it as probably as like, I don't know how to explain it, like committing to it fully without realizing what you're doing.
Yeah, 100%. And actually, I think I really like this question as well, because I think it maybe gets to the heart of the same thing. And obviously, as with every pod, like we get loads of questions about Viv. Like if Viv is playing brilliantly, it's like, Viv's brilliant. How are we going to keep her? And if she's not, or a little bit below her standard, it's like, what's happened to it? Like, you know, there's naturally, I think she's like the most iconic player in the team. So a lot of the questions are about her. We had loads of questions about her. But actually I'm just going to go with this one, because I think it gets to the heart of the discussion and it kind of covers everything. And it's from Caroline, who's @iron_line81. And she says, do you think people's opinions of Viv are being exaggerated? Her stats aren't awful. She's creating when she plays. Her goal against Ajax got us into the Champions League. I think perception is clouding opinion. She 100% has a lot to offer this team, and I think it's strange how many turn so quickly. And that also gets at the nature of a lot of the questions, which you know, have a big tone of concern over, oh my God, Viv, what's happened to Viv? She's out of the team, and now she's like been rested, and I completely understand that. But that's why I like that question. Do you think that we're too quick to go, oh my God, what's wrong with Vivian Miedema, every time like she's not at the absolute top of her game?
I would say we are, but I think that's just naturally as well. I think Viv has been at the center of our success for the past few seasons already. So when, you know, a big player isn't performing as well as you like, it's the same with any other team. You know, Chelsea has Sam Kerr, Man United will have Alessio Russo, Man City would have, say, Ellen White, used to be now Bunny Shaw. If Bunny Shaw has been scoring goals, if Bunny Shaw stops scoring goals, then Man City are going to start questioning it. I think it's just naturally when a player has had such a big impact and whose name is very centrally to the team, you're just naturally going to kind of panic about it way sooner than anything else. It's about not thinking before you actually start panicking. But the thing with Viv is it's quite interesting. I think because Viv has been starting as a 10 this entire season, I think that's just naturally a phase of adjusting to a new position. The start of the season, obviously she played last season, but that was mid-season. Whereas this season, you kind of, you know, Jonas had the entire summer. You have the entire preseason to work Viv into this position. And it's an adjustment period, especially with new players around, with different style of play, whatever you want to do, obviously. Champions League group stage hasn't been the easiest. WSL, you know, you start off quite heavy, but it's a hard one to kind of talk about without knowing the full story behind it, because it can be mentally, it can be physically. Obviously, she's had that hand wrapped for, I mean, last Champions League game, she had both hands wrapped. I don't know what she's doing, if she's joined like a boxing gym or something. So it could easily be physical just as mentally. But yeah, the same, you know, Viv is a great player. So whether she's underperforming, she's still going to be performing quite well to her standards. I just think also we're so used to seeing Viv as a nine, and as a nine, she's going to be scoring a lot of goals. As a 10, she's just naturally not going to be scoring that many goals. So we've seen that drop off, and it might be perceived as a bad thing without really looking into the kind of standard of being a 10 and being a 9. But then overall, I do still think that she's not performing at her best at all. So it's just, it all comes to account. But then again, you kind of need to go that step by step to kind of not panic too much and kind of understand that, yes, while she not might be performing well, it's not the end of the world, and it's not that she's performing bad entirely either. It's just all these little things are accumulating and she just needed a rest. And to be honest, I'm not too worried, because we do have a lot of midfield options, and Frida Manam has been on fire. So you look at what's happening, and it's, Viv probably deserves the break that she's gotten, and it probably would be good for Arsenal and Viv to kind of just chill out and kind of come back and reassess. Maybe not reassess, that's a bad word to describe it, but just kind of screw their heads on together and just get back at it the way it was before. But I think the break could probably do Viv some good, especially after the Euros. It wasn't necessarily a fun time for her, and she never really got that extended break, so I think it could be good for every party involved.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because I kind of agree with the tone of the question, that we're very quick to be quite alarmed about anything involving Vivian Miedema, but at the same time, it absolutely is a conversation. If you'd have told me in like 2019, for example, yeah, Viv's not getting in the team because Frida Manam's come in, you know, you'd be thinking, what? Like, who could take Vivian Miedema out of a team? So clearly, I think she'd probably say herself, she's not at her absolute kind of top level. At the same time, I think you're right to say that there's some information missing here. And that's both the right of the player and the club. We are not entitled to that information, whatever it is. But when there's a lack of information, then you get speculation. And so there's a lot of kind of, yeah, there's a lot of that flying around. There's a lot of, well, was it like she got COVID during the Euros and that hit her quite hard? And I asked Jonas about that last week, but obviously, as I suspected, he said he wanted to keep the discussions private. So, I mean, we did give Viv rest this time last year. We gave the Australian players extra time off over Christmas. I think there is an element to which this is an important part of how Jonas sees managing the squad. And incidentally, just before we started recording, Andreas Jonker, the Netherlands coach, he came out and said basically he doesn't like the schedule. He thinks it's too heavy, and he's worried about players getting injured. And so, and Viv's not the only one. It's Gilles Roord as well, was kind of pardoned, as it were, from this squad, because he said that, like, I don't want these players getting injured. And when you look around women's football at the moment, they're, you know, again,
it just doesn't stop.
Exactly, like Alexia Putellas and Sarah De Brits and Jennifer Marichat, like all these brilliant players who play in the same position as Viv now. Like, we've seen Leah Williamson twice, you know, in consecutive seasons now, be able to reasonably long term, like, I think they are connected. Like, there might not be as many games as there are in men's football, but there are fewer players as well. The squads aren't as big. There's a smaller pool of players to draw on to play them. So, you know, I do think there is an element of that to it as well, even irrespective of Viv's individual circumstances, whatever they may be. But yeah, That was kind of a long one, but we had so many questions about it. I felt that bared some time, and that was the question, I think, that encapsulated the debate best. This one's from Belinda, who is at Marnamit's Twitter. Do you feel the squad is better suited to players being injured or rested compared to last season? And do you think this is due to, and if so, do you think this is due to players becoming more used to Jonas's style and management? And how much did not losing any starting players in the summer help that?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
It's an interesting question. It's a hard one. The first part of the question was asking about
whether we're like better placed to cope with injuries this season compared to last year, with the players who've come in and, as a previous question said, played pretty well.
I think that's very position-based. Because, I mean, you look at the example, again, centre-backs in midfield. Viv comes out, Frida comes in, top-notch. Kim Lolo comes out, Jordan Nobbs comes in, top-notch. Leah Williamson, Raffaele goes out, Steph Catley-Lotta, level drops a bit, still doing fine though. We are able to cope a lot more than last season, I think. And I also think it's just the growth of certain players that also come into play in that. But at the same time, a best Arsenal starting 11 compared to the starting 11 that we would have now is quite different, I think. I think having Steph Catley playing in not her best position, I think, is going to not impact us a lot, because obviously we have Kate Eden and Steph Catley has played there before, but it's just not her natural position and she is a very good player. You're not going to get the best out of her in that position. I do feel grateful, though, for our midfield, because again, Viv comes out, Frida comes in, Jordan Knobs comes in for Kim Little. That's sorted. Level stays almost the same. If anything, I think that Frida and Jordan are going to bring a bit more energy into the midfield. And I'm not saying that Viv and Kim don't do that. It's just Viv and Kim have a very different style, have a much calmer style play than say Frida and Jordan together, especially together. And I do think that might benefit us more going into a game against Juventus, for example. I think that very high energy midfield could do us really well against Juventus. But yeah, I wouldn't say that we're coping better with it. I think the schedule that we have right now coming in with these injuries has been not too bad.
Yeah, I think that's the key point here. Like, during this block of games, Lyon away is the only one that I wasn't expecting to win, and most of them I was expecting to win pretty well. I think we'll know more in the next block of games where we've got like United away at Villa, Everton, Juventus twice, Lyon, and we're not going to have the chance to rotate very much because of injuries. That's the bit that scares me, not the quality of the players coming in. I think you make a really good point about the midfield as well. Like Jordan and Kim, completely different number eights, like complete opposites, which is why I think they actually work really well together. And Frieda's just really come in and made that 10 slot her own. And I'm fine with Lotta. Absolutely fine. I think Lotta, Leah, Hafaeli, I think they're all on roughly the same level. Like one of those, you know, Leah and Hafaeli, first choice, yep. One of them comes out, Lotta comes in, no problem. No problem for me. I think you're right. And I think the thing I think that maybe I'm a little bit anxious about is not so much Steph Catley playing at centre-back, but more it now means that Katie McCabe has to play at left back and she has to play every game there. And it means she can't play in the wide positions. And you're seeing at the moment Beth Mead, Caitlin Ford backing up a lot of minutes. And now Lena Hurtig, who's been, you know, slowly bedding in, has now like pulled her hamstring. So she's going to be out for a few weeks. Thankfully, the international break will absorb most of that. I think that that's what scares me more. It's not the quality of the players coming in. It's the fact that the squad's getting smaller during a period where we're going to be backing up some bigger games.
I think this is our limit as to how far we can kind of hold up with the injuries that we have.
Yeah, and on that note, obviously, Jordan's pulled out of the England squad today with injury. So we'll see what that's about. And
great times.
Perhaps form some kind of prayer circle. And as well as Viv, another thing we had, another player we had a lot of questions about is Gio Quiros, of course, who's on loan at Everton and not getting many minutes at the moment. And Jeremy Bradley at Jeremy Bradley 49 and at Adam Lanezra, which is obviously Arsenal backwards, at Adam Salter 4, both had similar questions as well. But Phil at Phil AWFC, Brian Sorensen, the Everton manager, said of Gio before the Villa game, she's physically not actually ready to play more than 15 to 20 minutes. So we're working on that. How concerned should we be that she's been training them with them for 7+ weeks, but is apparently not strong enough to play more than 20 minutes? And I guess before I hand this over, Alex, as an additional piece of info, I mean, you might know this, she didn't go back to Barcelona, after her loan spell. So she didn't really have a proper pre-season. I think she was training, but I think she was training on her own. Because obviously things got quite toxic at Barcelona. And I believe I'm right in saying she never went back there. And she joined Everton quite late in the window. Well, she joined us and then went to Everton quite late in the window. There was a lot of sorting out with the transfer. So, like, she didn't have a proper pre-season. However, we are 7 weeks in now. Are you worried about that at all?
To be fair, I'm not. With the thing with Gio, it's a very interesting kind of player. And when you look at, I mean, she's 19 and she feels like she's been around for years and years now. The thing with Gio is that she's been at Barcelona since 2020, well, with the first team technically. And then she went on loan to Levante, where I think she had an okay season. But when you speak out at Levante last season, Gio isn't really the player that you'd speak about. And obviously with that and then with the Barcelona in the mix, Gio hasn't really had a consistent season in for a couple seasons now. So it's understandable that she's still finding her way. New team, new league, it is quite heavy, especially when you go from not playing to come into the WSL. It is quite a big change, but 7 weeks in, you would expect her to have a bit more minutes, especially with the name that she carries around. I mean, she's an amazing player. She's never really had that consistent playing time with any club to get her to her full potential. I mean, luckily she's still only 19, so she has a lot of time to kind of progress and grow into the player that she wants to be. But it is very questionable that it has been 7 weeks and we've not seen much of her. But I think that also, again, I do agree that there's probably a missing piece of information here that would probably be the key piece of information to really know why she's not been playing much. But I'm not too worried. It's still, there's still seasons left, if you can say. But I just think she needs a consistent club, consistent playing time, and I think we can see her at her best. And again, she signed for Arsenal. She's 19. There's a lot of future there, and there's a lot of time to kind of get her to that level. So 7 weeks, I think it's fine for now.
Yeah, yeah. I think long term, I'm not worried. This is a player I know pretty well, and the talent is just absolutely unquestionable. The numbers she put up for Levante, you know, considering as well that Levante are not. I mean, I know that they. You know, they got to the Champions League qualifying rounds last year. But I guess the thing from her point of view, one of the reasons she went on loan to Everton is because she's kind of on the cusp of that Brazil starting lineup. She's looking to break into the starting lineup. I don't think that's going to happen now. But also, I asked Jonas about this because essentially, in hindsight, I think the loan made a lot of sense. But in hindsight, she probably would have just been better off being with Arsenal. And I think she'd have probably got about the same amount of minutes, like off the bench. And I'm looking at Beth Mead playing another 90 minutes against Leicester on Sunday because we didn't have anyone else to bring on, really. And I'm looking at that and thinking we could have given Gio half an hour there. But the thing Jonas said when he talked about sending her on loan was he said she's been used to playing, like you say, she's been playing for the last two seasons. And he said he didn't want to stop that because for a young player, it can feel like when you've been used to being like a starter for a club and then you're not anymore, it feels like something's been taken away from you. And he wanted to stay in a bit of a flow, and obviously that hasn't happened. I'm not mega concerned. If it continues like this, I honestly think we'll call her back, and we'll either use her ourselves, and that's a position I'd be very happy with, another wide forward, quite frankly, or else we'll find somewhere else for her to go on loan, I think. So yeah. I think if this is has been a bad loan, that would be a shame. And that might not be Everton's fault, by the way. That'd be a shame, but I think we can rectify it in January if we think we need to. So, definitely a lot of questions about that. And I think understandably so. This question from Clive at Clive Bunting, another regular. And obviously this relates to, well, not just Manchester City. I believe Stoke and West Brom women have done this about moving away from wearing white shorts. And for listeners who don't know, Manchester City women will no longer wear white shorts with their home kit. They wear burgundy shorts now. And this is obviously around, well, maybe not obviously, it's around like concerns around menstruation and things like that. And so Clive asks, with teams moving away from white shorts, is it time for Arsenal to follow suit? And I think like a secondary question here, which I think is really interesting as well. And is it important the women and men's teams wear the same kit, or are there benefits in having distinct identities? We've seen with England, for example, the England women's team now have different kits. And let's face it, it would be a nice moneymaker for Nike if they actually made more than about 20 to go on sale. But so it's a bit of a two-parter question, like, do you think Arsenal should move away from the white shorts? And actually, do you think that maybe it's time for the men's and women's team, you know, if Adidas are looking to make a bit more money out of merch, for them to have different kits anyway?
It's an interesting one. It's a hard one because you do understand, and it is very annoying. And I think it is very wise to go away from the white shorts. It's just, I mean, playing football just while you're menstruating is just very uncomfortable to begin with. And if you have to worry about staining your white shorts on top of that being on television to millions and millions at home, it's very stressful. And I do agree that we probably should go from white shorts, but at the same time, it's not as easy as it sounds either. Because again, you have to bring in the brands, you have to bring in everything that goes into designing kit. You know, Arsenal red and white historically, it's about changing a kit that's been there for ages and ages. It's about designing something else. It's about bringing money. So it's hard. It should be done, but it is hard. And I think it's very dependent on brands rather than clubs and players wanting to do good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I should point out as well that Jonas was asked about this a couple of weeks ago before the Man City announcement, actually, and he said that the players have been asked by Adidas about this a few times, and they've indicated that they're comfortable to continue in white shorts. And he says, like, he doesn't have anything to do with those conversations because it's a player decision, which it absolutely should be. I guess, like, an interesting counter argument. Not a counter argument. I think this is a development of the argument. Look, obviously, I don't menstruate, so I don't have like any I don't have any skin in this game. So what I think is, I don't think anything. It's irrelevant. Like, it's just down to the players. But I did read, I think it was Katie Wyatt actually a year or so ago in The Athletic wrote about this, and she kind of, I guess, offered like another viewpoint, which was like, well, so what? And, you know, so what if, like, menstrual blood shows on the shorts? We don't get funny about, like, someone cutting their head and, like, oh, don't have a white collar because you might bleed on it or something. Now, and look, I don't want to put words in Katie's mouth. The piece is on The Athletic, and I think she puts all the caveats in it, like, look, I know it's not that easy, and obviously different players will have different kind of feelings about it and things like that. But actually, if you were in a, like, properly... in the ideal world, no one would care. You know, which is the ideal world, which doesn't necessarily exist.
The other thing about it is that you can go about it a different way as well. So if you don't want to change, again, if there's Arsenal red and white through and through, if you don't want to change that, design undershorts that could potentially, with technology that can absorb that, so players don't have to worry about it. Again, I mean, I think we're technologically advanced enough to be able to do that. There's menstruating underwear, so it could potentially, it doesn't just have to be not wear white shorts. Like, there can be other alternatives, but again, it's so dependent on external factors that have nothing to do with players or the club, and that's the hard bit where that comes into it. So whether the players want it or not, it doesn't mean that it's going to happen.
And actually I believe there's still a rule, and maybe this is something that needs looking at, but like, players, I believe in men's and women's football, if they wear like cycling shorts or undershorts, they have to be the same color. And it's the same if they wear strapping, it has to be the same color as their shirts and things like that. And again, maybe that's, I don't know, maybe it has been, maybe it's being looked at, but maybe that's something that needs to be looked at. And maybe you say, well, actually, if they're wearing white shorts in women's football, like, don't worry about it if they're wearing darker cycling shorts or something. But again, like, a very like interesting conversation that's out there and that should be had. So we're having it. Simple as that. This question is from Elle at Grass Seasons, who got me a ticket for England USA. So thanks, Elle. Do you have thoughts on how Jonas has grown into his role? He's speaking a lot about team maturity, and I think it's clear he's feeling a lot more confident and settled in terms of switching up the team, dealing with injuries and inquiries, etc. And I have a thought on the latter, actually. But do you have a thought on that? Have you seen like a development in Jonas?
I definitely have. I don't know if it's for the better necessarily, but I don't know how to explain it. It's he's now grown into that role of, he's very comfortable with his position and his position at a club like Arsenal and with the players that he has. And perhaps now you're seeing a bit more of Jonas being more strict with what he likes and what he doesn't like, because he has grown into that role a lot more than what he did last season, where he was still kind of adjusting. So you got to see a lot more rotations, a lot more players that you like, for example, got to play more. Whereas this season, he's a bit more sturdy and a bit more strict of what he likes and what he doesn't. And you're kind of seeing the downsides to it just as much as the upsides of it. And I think there's still a bit to go personnel-wise and style-wise to fully know what Jonas wants to do with the team. I think this season it's still not fully there yet as to what he wants to do, especially now with injuries and Viv and everything else, you know, it's just he's unable to get into that consistent rhythm of fully playing the way he wants to play. But I think I do definitely agree that he is a lot more confident in as to he knows what he wants and he doesn't want. He knows the players that he likes and he doesn't like. And you could see that a lot more with the decision making that he's making and the way that we're playing. It's a lot more Jonas based. And again, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing for certain areas. But look, we're getting results. We're playing good football, essentially. And players are a lot more comfortable with Jonas in the sense that they are already used to them after one season. So there's a lot of benefits about Jonas being very confident in his position at the moment.
Yeah, I think, I guess he's always been like from the very first game against Chelsea, right? We've always known he'd be boisterous on the touchline, and that takes a certain amount of confidence. And he said before that he almost does that deliberately because he wants his players to be intense. I don't think he still does that, but I don't think he does it as much anymore. And I think that's because he trusts the players to, you know, I think at the beginning it was like, and he talks a lot about how, for example, when we play some of these smaller teams and we're like 3-0 up after 45 minutes or something, he's very like, no, you keep going right to the end. Like, keep going, keep going, keep going. He talks about how he lost the league in Sweden once by one goal on goal difference. And he said it taught him you have to treat every second of every game. And he wants that intensity. I think we see slightly less of that on the touchline now because I think he's comfortable that he's got it. I don't know whether this is a development, but like, I actually really enjoy listening to his thoughts on the administration of the game just in general. And actually, I think he did that a lot last season, you know, look, quite a lot of the time through kind of complaints. And we both know Jonas has got a very like blunt, very blunt style when he talks sometimes. And, you know, he was talking about multi-ball last season and he was like, I don't understand why we don't have it. You know, the ball's out of play for too long. He's talked this season already about squad sizes and how there should be parity between Champions League and WSL squad sizes. Otherwise, you end up in a situation with players you can't use in certain competitions. And, you know, just his thoughts in general. And he was talking about the Nations League last week and he kind of made that point that, like, I think it's a good idea that we have more competitive games, but we've got to think about it the other side and getting more players to play these games. I quite enjoy listening to him on things like that. And I'd have to say, like, I think Emma Hayes has always been quite good on a lot of that stuff as well, just because I think she's confident that she has like a status in the game to be able to say certain things, which I think are quite interesting. And I think you get more maybe from those managers. But again, I think they've got more on their plate as well. So, like, obviously, like Leicester and Aston Villa, they don't care whether Champions League and WSL squads are the same size. They don't want multi-ball because they don't want to help teams like Arsenal beat them. And so there is an element to which, obviously, Jonas is looking after the interests of Arsenal, and that's his job. But I do quite enjoy listening to him on that stuff. And it's interesting in his press conferences because sometimes if no one asks him about some of that stuff, he'll just say it anyway. Sometimes he just comes in and he's just like, I'm going to say this and I'm probably going to wait for like three questions to see whether one of you asks me. And if you don't, I'm going to tell you anyway. So I think, you know, as a communicator, I think he's really interesting to listen to. I know he rubs some people up the wrong way, but for me, that's all part of the fun. This question then, now Arsenal have been linked very seriously via the Swedish press, and the Swedish press usually get this stuff right, with a goalkeeper whose name I've completely blanked on, D'Angelo, Canadian goalkeeper who plays for a Swedish club. It looks like that's going to happen, basically, even though we just signed Kaelin McKersey. So Dan, Dante Smith, but Dan spelt as you spell Daniel van der Donk in Dutch. Why do you think we've been linked to a keeper, given that we've only just signed Kaelin and Jonas seems to like Manu Zinsberger?
I don't know. It's very intriguing. I think our keeper situation has always been interesting since Joe Montemurro days. it might just be to have a third keeper as a choice, and to have that second keeper option up for grabs, kind of. I think Manu is going to be number one choice no matter what. But it would be nice to get rotation once in a while. But I don't think our second choice goalkeeper is up to Manu's standards at the moment. So it might be just to have that competition in that second place spot to potentially start rotating a lot of games when you start getting more of those Champions League midweek matches and stuff like that. But again, like, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. It's our keeper situation has always been interesting, but I think Manu Zinsberger has had that. She's going to have that number one spot unlocked, but I think it could be nice to kind of have a different voice in the back a bit more often than what we actually do right now.
Yeah, I guess my working theory on this at the moment is we have seen Jonas make stopgap signings. So, I mean, he brought in Tobin Heath, and that was for a year. He wanted Hafaeli last summer, but couldn't get her until January, just because of the way the calendar was in Brazil. So he signed Simone Boy. And I think that was a stopgap signing because he wanted Hafaeli. He knew he couldn't get it till January, but he wanted a body in. So he's like, right, I'll bring in Simone Boy. And frankly, once Hafaeli comes in, I won't need Simone Boy anymore. And I wonder if something similar has happened here, maybe, because she plays in Sweden. Their season ends in November, so it's very difficult to get players out of Sweden in the summer. We saw that with Stina last season. We couldn't get her till January. So maybe it's just that's the goalkeeper he wanted. But you couldn't get her till January, so he had to sign. Maybe he had to sign someone as a bit of a stopgap, and maybe Kaelin is that stopgap. You know, we played against her in the Champions League last year, and maybe it was a sense of, okay, she's quite good. And you know, we haven't really had three goalkeepers for quite a long time. You know, we've had two and like an academy kind of choice. So that's my working theory on it at the moment, if this move goes through, that maybe Kaelin was a bit of a stopgap signing, which I hope doesn't sound disrespectful, but I can't think of any other reason. So let's, in fact, before we wrap up on the last one, or what I want to be the last question, there is another. I intended to ask this after the Jonas question, actually. It's from Alistair, who's at AliBoy82. Jonas is being very guarded on injury updates this season. Do you think this is his personal choice? Or in the men's side, Arteta is also guarded with injury updates. Do we think this is an overarching club philosophy?
I think it's more club. Arsenal are good at kind of voicing what happens with players, but at their own time. I think that's just a general club communication standard. And it's not bad. It's just there. It's more of a, we'll let you know when we know. And that's that, however long it takes, basically. And I think Jonas has no reason to give updates if he doesn't know necessarily, or if the club doesn't want to say that just yet. For many different reasons. It goes on what you said, Tim, about, I was going to tell you, Tom, my new housemate is called Tom, so that name stuck in my head. You can be named Tom now, Tim, if you want. But it goes on what you said about how Jonas has that extra chip on his shoulder being a manager for a club like Arsenal. With the injury updates, not only is it based on, you know, your opposition's get to know, but also it's just a lot more eyes on it. So if you don't want to say it right away until you have more thought process on it. But again, like the other day in the press conference, when you talked about Kim Little, he said it was a knee injury, but couldn't give any more detail. So I do think that Jonas is actually one of the better ones when it comes to having injury updates. He tells you little things that give you somewhat peace of mind. I mean, it's not peace of mind because it's an injury, but he gives you little details to kind of lead you on a little bit until you get the final answer from the official communication from the club. But I think it's more of a club thing than anything else.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. This has always happened in women's football where there's like, it might not happen much longer, but where there's been less reporting, clubs, if they can hide information from their opponents, they will. I think it's that simple. On Kim, they know. They know that Kim has an MCL injury, and they know it's going to be 8 to 10 weeks, and they knew that. But I understand why they don't say that. As much as that's frustrating for fans, I guess the comfort we take from it is that it's about protecting us from our opponents. What's interesting, I had like a little chat with Jonas at Colney the other week, and he was talking about, because I'd been at like the open training session, and he was talking about how in Sweden, all of the training sessions are open. And he was saying that, like, if you wanted to like work on set pieces or something, and you kind of say, "Ah, can you guys just leave for 5 minutes while we do set pieces?" Like, Swedish journalists are like, "No, this is like freedom of speech." Free, like, he's like very used to a culture where it's like the journalists are like, "Nope," like very, very liberal like attitude to media. It's like, "Nope, we're here. It's all for our eyes," and things like that. And it was really interesting. He was saying like it's really weird. Like he's found it. Like odd being at Arsenal where it's at Colney and like no one gets Fortress Colney, like you can't get in there unless you're supposed to be there kind of thing, and having that privacy. So it's quite interesting, but I think it's largely like something that's just always happened in women's football because of the level of reporting isn't there. The one we're going to close on, always like to close on a fun question. The good people at AWFC Home and Away, who are at AWFC Home Away on Twitter, have produced a little bit of a songbook for each of our players in the squad. And there's some bangers in there, it has to be said. I've heard a few of them on the North Bank at Meadow Park, but they've asked, and I'll put the link of this to this song sheet in the show notes. They've asked for favourite song from both of us. Alex, do you have a favourite song, or do you want to give me the indignity of going first?
I think Cade McCabe's song is always going to be my number one. Yeah. I think it's a classic. I was singing it in Madrid, on the street to Madrid. Me and Seuss and Jesse, well, it was me and Seuss mainly, we just started singing it out of randomly, because why not?
Yeah. So and that's been a staple for a few years now, that we've got McCabe, Katie McCabe. There are loads of really good ones. So I love the She's Red, She's White, She Loves the Vegemite, Caitlin Ford. And I know the people who made this up. The Stinner Black Stinniest to the tune of Karma Chameleon by Culture Club as well. But the best one, and I did hear this at Meadow Park, I believe at the Brighton game, it's a song for Lena Hurtig to the tune of Dancing Queen by ABBA, which obviously, given the Swedish connection, is pretty apt anyway, but lyrically very, very good. I'm not going to sing it because I want people to actually listen to this podcast, and I've got a little bit of a cold anyway. So, you know, it'll all be very raspy.
It's an excuse, isn't it?
It'll all be a little bit raspy and I won't be able to do the high notes, but she's our magic Swede, Lena, number 17, on the left, on the right, having the time of her life. See our girl, cause a scene, Lena the magic Swede. I think that's wonderful. And that should become a real staple at Meadow Park. So, do get on to that songbook and have a little look at that, because there is a song for every player and some absolute bangers among them as well. On that not so musical note on my part, let's bring it to a close for now. Alex, thanks so much as ever for your time and your insight.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll try and do three podcasts this month to make up for the October black hole. I've definitely got another one lined up for later in the month. Obviously, for those of you who don't know, the next game is Arsenal versus Manchester United in the WSL at Emirates Stadium on Saturday, the 19th of November at 5:30 p.m. Already 30,000 tickets sold, but that means there are 30,000 tickets unsold. It's a 5:30 Saturday kickoff. It's going to be a really, really good game. It's going to be a really challenging game for Arsenal, and a really big, engaged crowd will help them. And just a reminder as well that during the Men's World Cup, the women's calendar keeps rolling on. So there are other games at the Emirates, Juve in December, Lyon in December as well, a home game against Everton at Meadow Park in December. So while there's a little bit of a black hole in terms of the men's domestic calendar, the women's keeps going. And obviously we will be across all of that on Arsblog News in video, audio and written format. But until the next time we speak to you, thanks so much for downloading and listening as ever. And we will not wait 6 weeks to speak to you again. Thanks and bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.